We're going to go ahead and get started. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Present online, I think I heard Representative Seaton from Homer. Representative Wilson was going to try to dial in, but I know she had a plane to catch. Representative Kawasaki and Gunberg from Fairbanks. And the Kenai LIO is online, and the Juneau LIO is online, and present Representative Chair Johnson.
What's his name?
Representative Lynn, and I'm sorry it's Friday late afternoon. I've been in meetings all day.
Maybe not,
my dear. Yeah, well, I'd still vote for him. Today we're going to be doing a presentation by Toshiba Westinghouse on small capacity, and I say that they're not terribly small capacity, but that's the only name that I can call them at this time other than the 4S reactor, which means nothing to anyone, I don't think. And with us today we have Marvin Yoder, and I understand you're going to introduce the presenters. We also have Representative Chugach and several other members in the audience. I'd like to welcome everyone. This is a, we're going to listen to the presentation, and there will be kind of a round table to discuss the possibilities. Chair Newman, our co-chair Newman, is in a LBNA meeting and will be here as soon as he's available.
Hi, is anybody else online?
Yes, is that Peggy?
Yep.
Representative Wilson, we've just gotten started, and I was hoping you'd be online, and I do understand that you may have to dart out to another meeting, but I appreciate you joining us for the time you can. With us we have online Kawasaki, Gutenberg, and Seat, and Representative Lynn and myself present. So with that, I'd like to introduce Marvin Yoder. And if you guys have questions at any time online, it is testimony by invitation only, but if you guys have questions at any time, don't hesitate to jump in and ask them. With that, Mr. Yoder.
Thank you for this opportunity. We were very appreciative last session when House Bill 191 was introduced to kind of help the state take a look at another option of alternative energy. It was August of 2003, the first time that Toshiba visited Alaska, visited Galena, and talked to us about this small reactor, 10 megawatt reactor. And we had felt for a long time that this was a very appropriate thing for rural Alaska. They're off the grid, they're away from any gas lines. So trying to get power in those places has been by diesel for a long time, and all that in the middle of the summertime, and try to get enough diesel to last all winter. So this seems very appropriate technology, mainly from the fact that very safe type of operation, and that it has a 30-year life, therefore we don't have to have a lot of technology on site. We can run these in remote areas.
Before you go any further, Marvin, to the guys online, do you have the presentation in front of you? Did you get that in time? Representative Seaton, do you have a copy of the presentation?
I do, thank you.
And Representative Wilson, do you have one as well?
I am going to, I'm at my office right now, and in a little bit I'm going to run home because I've got it at home. Not here.
We can email it to you if you'd like. It's on the net under House Resources. And Scott and David, do you guys have a copy?
Yeah, I have it. The 4S reactor.
Yes, that's it. Okay, I just want to make sure you had copies so that we, before we got too far into it, you'd be able to know what we were talking about. I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Yoder. Please go ahead.
So in any event, we did look at, for remote areas of Alaska, we thought the 10 megawatt unit was appropriate for some of the hub communities. Toshiba had also had a variant of a 50 megawatt unit, which was way too big for there, but we have come to realize that it's very going to be very competitive with other types of alternative energy for the rest of the state. And so basically, when the bill was introduced, what we look forward to is just something that is going to allow people to have options to take a look at one more item when they look at what they want to do for power in their local communities. This is one more option for them. We feel that especially the 10 megawatts for rural areas and the 50 megawatts for the grid would be appropriate and that can help us find it. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Tony Grinsey. Tony is with Westinghouse. Tony is the person that has been making presentations to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for the last year and a half. Also with us today is Kazu Ari, and he is from Toshiba, kind of the manager of this plant.
From
that, I'll turn it over to Tony Grancy to do the slide presentation.
Actually, if you'd introduce yourself for the record so we can have who's speaking. And one thing, when you guys are speaking, if you'd identify yourself so that the record would know who is actually doing the talking. So for sure.
I'm Tony Grancy with Westinghouse, supporting Toshiba, and actually the next part of the presentation is going to be presented by Mr. Arie from Toshiba, and then I will finish up the presentation next.
Mr. Chairman, this is Paul Seaton.
Yes, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, hey, before we get started, I was just curious, on the paperwork that I have, we have a 30 megawatt T and a 10 megawatt E, but I heard Marvin talking about a 50 megawatt, so I'm just wanting to make clear what presentation we have and what megawatts or what those configuration meanings are. Thank you.
If you'd clarify that, I think on page 3 we have a 30 megawatt T.
Right, we're about to get to that. That's where we are in the presentation. That particular bullet there, that's saying that the initial configuration that we have designed and are presenting to the USNRC is 30 megawatts thermal, and that relates to 10 megawatts electric output. When we get a little bit further in the presentation, we'll talk about the differences between 30 and the 15 megawatt version, so that should become a little clearer.
Yeah, for everyone online, we're on page 3 of the presentation. After this, you're going to have to keep up on your own.
This is Kaza Arie from Toshiba. I'm a senior manager of the fast reactor project management section. And also I am the project manager on 4S in Toshiba. And before our presentation, I would say thank you so much all of you for having this opportunity to be here on the 4S. I would like to show you our current voice status to you, and I would like to have the future good relationship with Alaska people. Thank you so much for having this time.
Go ahead.
Can I go ahead?
Please,
yeah. On slide 3, this is an overview. Our main goal of this concept is safe, green, reliable, and grid appropriate, and also applicable to the small remote areas. And also, we pay attention to the high security and low proliferation and minimizing infrastructure and operation O&M requirements. And the concept is a sodium cooled fast reactor. We have been developing in cooperation with CREPI. CREPI is Japanese utilities research organization like U.S. ECMI. And also we are now developing with Argonne National Laboratory and in support with Westinghouse. And as you already said, we have two versions. On this slide is just only small ones. But as Tony said, we will explain a little bit more the difference between for two versions. And so main features are passive safety and long time refueling interval and low maintenance and high inherent security. And as you can see, for the high security, this reactor vessel is below the ground. This is the reactor vessel, reactor. Steam generator here, and turbine generator here. This is a very, very brief concept of this reactor, as you may know. And the next slide, 4, this is also general arrangement of the plant. major feature for the France Grand General Arrangement is that we have a seismic isolator. And also, as I said, reactor 4 reactor building is below grade, underground. And this picture is a kind of a seismic isolator. And next slide shows the core configuration. This slide shows that we have long life and long core life. So it contributes to the good economy. Also, it does not depend on the unstability for the long-term fuel prices, like oil. Another advantage of the operation is just as simple. Low maintenance, passive safety, or some others. This is one of the major advantages. And next slide. This is almost the same as I said on the first slide. So I skipped it. And this is also, as I say, the low maintenance. Which comes from, for example, the electric magnetic pump. This equipment has no moving parts, which contributes to the low maintenance requirement. So it reduces the operation maintenance cost, but also the reducing the reactor shutdown time for the maintenance. Also, we have the passive safety system for during the accident. This is the RVAC, which cools the reactor heat during the accident with the passively. So there is no moving parts around here. So it also contributes to the low maintenance. So that is a very, very brief overview and major advantages. And after the slide 9, we would like to show you a little bit of detail of design. So I will switch to the Tony for the presentation.
Well, before you start, I'd like to recognize Representative Tuff has joined us. Any questions out there while we're at a stopping point?
Greg, this is Paul Seaton. I had one. What was the, back on slide 6, automatic burn-up compensation? I don't know what that means.
So, as the reactor fuel is used up over the course of the core life, the reflector, which we'll talk a little bit more about the reflector in a moment, the reactor automatically compensates for the burn-up by positioning the control mechanisms to maintain the reactor at 100% power. And it does that by moving the control mechanism at a very, very incrementally slow rate to properly position the reflector on the core. And if that's not entirely clear, midway through my part of the presentation coming up, we go into those components and systems in a little bit more detail.
So I think what they're talking about is the slowly feeding the rod automatically to generate the power, Paul, is the simplest way I could put it.
Right. No, that sounds fine. I just didn't know what that meant. And I guess the only other question on slide number 9, where it says RX vessel and RX building, RX stands for what?
Reactor.
Okay, thank you very much. Those are my questions.
Thanks, Paul. Anybody else while we're stopped? Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to go a little bit into the design of the plant and the system without trying to be as non-technical as possible, and if I'm not technical enough, then we can address that in the question. 4S basically has three heat exchanger loops in the design. The first loop on the left there with the oval circle around it is actually the reactor vessel. It's a sodium cooled type reactor vessel. That's where the fuel is. Inside that vessel, we also have the pumps which move the sodium in that loop. And we have the heat exchanger which transfers the heat to the intermediate heat exchange loop, which is shown in the center of that picture in yellow. Basically, the intermediate loop takes the heat from the reactor and it pumps it over to that steam generator, which is just a little bit to the right of the picture with SG on it, right there. And in that steam generator, we produce steam, which is used in this case, in this configuration, to turn the turbine and to produce electricity. We can also produce a version of the 4S reactor, which doesn't produce any electricity, but just generates steam for process heat. So again, we have three loops. Two of them use sodium as a coolant, and the last is kind of a standard steam water loop you might see in a cold pump. In the beginning, we had the question about the two different versions. Two versions, we have a 10 megawatt electrical version, and we have a 50 megawatt electrical version. Those two versions, if they're used to produce heat rather than electricity, are respectively 30 megawatts thermal or 135 megawatts thermal. Some of the components in the two different versions are basically identical in size. The reactor building and the reactor vessel are actually the same size in either version. The difference in the power output stems from the specific design of the fuel and how hard we run the fuel, and obviously the heat exchanger components have to be sized differently for the two different outputs. You also, if you look carefully at the picture, you'll see the configuration, the piping is just slightly different in the two versions as well, but there's no real need to talk about it. EMP is electromagnetic pump. Both the intermediate loop, which is that one you can see with the label, I'm having trouble but you can obviously see it because you asked about it. And there's also EM pumps used in the reactor vessel itself. And I have a picture that I think a couple slides about the EM pumps, and as Tad noted already, we're using these EM pumps because they have no moving parts, and that extends the life of the plant.
Tony, before you go on, how much of this technology, electromagnetic pumps, it sounds almost Star Trek-ish, and are those things in existence now? Are they off the shelf? Is that technology that's being developed? What of this is available now, and what of this has to be licensed? So kind of work us through what exists today versus, something we're still looking at that's potentially for development.
There's really nothing used in the 4S design that is brand new technology. Everything we're using has some kind of experience somewhere in the world. The EM pumps, for example, have been used for decades in other sodium test reactors. There's pumps that have run for 20 years in test reactors in Idaho. The various options we're using here haven't necessarily been used all together at the same time or in the same way, but they've all been used somewhere before. Sodium cooled reactor, coolant cooled reactor, those are different in many countries around the world. Those really are the two things we should be trying to jump out. The metallic fuel, we're using metallic fuel, and there's decades of experience in fabricating and using metallic fuel.
And I guess the point I want to make is that, we want something that's good, but I'm not sure we want to be the guinea pig. So I'd like to make sure that the technology is tested, maybe not as a unit, but at least the technology, we're not way out front on the leading edge.
Yeah, we're careful in design not to do anything that really reinvents the wheel. We just took the best features that we could find already developed somewhere in the world and applied them to our system.
Any questions while we're here?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is Paul.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. On the cooling loops, I see the arrows on mine. There's gray circulation on the left-hand side. I think that the yellow is sodium. Is it? What's the, and then the right-hand one, the green, or whatever color that is I believe that's steam, that's water. But what is the gray areas, the ones that are look like they're venting out of the top from the, on the left-hand side of the diagram there?
Okay, I think what you're looking at is the two residual heat removal systems, the IRAX and the RVAX. We actually have a slide later which shows those areas in another color, but those are basically just air passageways that work with natural convection. So everything on here, I think you correctly identified the sodium in the reactor and in the intermediate loop, steam and water on the right-hand side, everything associated to the right of the steam generator, everything associated with the turbine, and those other pathways that show going out the vent stacks, out the top, that's air passage.
Okay, thank you very much.
Christian Keller, do you have a question?
Yeah, I'd just like to, could you explain the difference on why it's so green?
Exactly. Since we're using the same size reactor vessel, we're only taking out 10 megawatts at a time. The fuel can last that much longer than the 50 megawatt version. The 10-year number on the 50 megawatt version is somewhat of an approximation because we can, by varying the design and how we do some safety analysis, that number could be tweaked a little bit. It may end up being 12 years. But that's right now, we think that's the best. But you're correct. That's basically the difference in the life. We're talking about something that's basically the same size, and it's just how hard it works.
Next question.
And now we're on slide 12. I just wanted to point out a couple of the numbers that are on this slide, and I've highlighted them in red. Up on the top two lines, we're showing the size of the core that's inside the reactor, just to give you a perspective of how big this unit is. The core is tall and narrow. It's only about 3 feet wide, just a little bit over a yard, and it's about 8 feet tall. So our reactor vessel, as you probably can tell from the pictures we've shown up to now, is a tall and a narrow vessel. The fuel enrichment on the fourth line there is either 17 or 19%. We have two enrichment ranges on the core. Show a better picture of the core and slider here. The important point there is that the threshold for proliferation grade fuel accepted around the world is 20%. So the enrichment we use for the 4S is below that proliferation grade. And the other number I wanted to highlight here is the design pressure.
Would you explain proliferation grade?
Proliferation grade, if the fuel is proliferation grade, that means it's attractive to, for example, a terrorist organization or someone who would want to obtain that fuel and maybe could use it in a nuclear weapon.
So it's below bomb grade?
Yeah. In addition to all those other security factors we showed on a previous slide, it makes 4S a very unattractive target for somebody who may want to take the fuel, try to take the fuel. The red number on the bottom there, the design pressure under the reactor vessel, show that 44 psi, and we wanted to show that to demonstrate that what we're talking about here, the benefit of using sodium for heat transfer is because it remains a liquid at such a high temperature, we can keep it at a very low pressure. And compared to the standard kinds of nuclear reactors that we use in this country up to now, they have a design pressure up to 2,500 pounds psi. This is a very low pressure safe system. We talked a little bit about the core up to now. What we're seeing here is we're looking at a picture of the core and the reflector from the top. The hexagonal shapes there are the fuel subassemblies. There's 18 subassemblies that are loaded into the reactor. The two different colors, as you can see on the very bottom right there, that again relates to the enrichment of uranium.
Here's the committee for the record.
In the fuel, we use a different arrangement just to balance the power out across the entire core. And so you have the core there surrounded by that that donut-looking shape with a bunch of holes in it. And what that is, that's what we call the reflector. That reflector is actually six segments of a large cylindrical ring that fits around the core, and it's either raised or lowered to increase the power of the core. Basic 25-word description of how a fast reactor works is the neutrons that are trying to escape from the fission of the uranium. If the reflector is used to bounce those neutrons back into the core, that increases or stabilizes the power of the reactor. So what we do over core life, and this relates back to that question about automatic burn-up compensation, as the uranium is gradually depleted over the core life, we raise that reflector up from the bottom of the reactor vessel so that it overlaps more and more of the fuel and is therefore able to bounce more and more neutrons back into the fuel. And on the surface, that's a pretty simple concept of how you make this thing work.
This is Scott up in Fairbanks.
Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I have a question just about the fuel source itself. You know, we had a presentation earlier this morning discussing that Alaska has no long-term source of fuel. How available is the fuel for a reactor like this size?
The availability of fuel isn't necessarily related to the size of the reactor. I mean, there's a worldwide uranium market, and I think the prices have actually been going down over the last year. Basically, you get the raw material from whoever is selling it, whether it's coming from Canada or Kazakhstan, and then the fuel has to be processed into the configuration and type that that you will be using. Right now, there's no real crunch on the availability of uranium for fuel. Yet the other part of that question is, we're talking about a small reactor here, so we need a lot less than a large reactor. We also use ours pretty efficiently. Again, you're only refueling your reactor every 10 or every 30 years. The refueling cycle on a typical light water reactor is 18 to 24 months. It puts you in a little bit better position if you have a small reactor that has a very long refueling interval.
Great, thank you.
Get to slide 14. This just shows basically from the side what we talked about on the last slide. You can see here the red part of this, starting from there up to right about there, that's the fuel. That's the fuel rod. And so looking at the top of that, that's all 18 of those fuel subassemblies in the center of the reactor. And then on the outside, again, is a cylindrical reflector there in dark blue. And you can see in this case, it's just, you know, partially overlapping the very bottom of the fuel. So this is this picture would be taken somewhere, you know, fairly early in core life, just a little bit of overlap. We also show here that we have a central shutdown. There's two mechanisms we use to shut down the reactor, whether it's a normal shutdown or we're tripping the reactor because of the problem. And one of them is the reflector we've been talking about. Basically, we secure power to the reflector, and it will fall down by gravity to the bottom of the reactor vessel such that it's no longer overlapping the fuel. Instead, we have this cavity overlapping the fuel, and